Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right, well, let's see. It's Friday, June 27th, a week away from the 4th of July. The tropics are quiet. Any idea what the weather's going to be like? You got it. Hot, humid, oppressively hot and humid, with a chance for afternoon showers or morning showers. There's no telling where one's going to pop up. And when they do pop up, they could be heavy and it could cause some street flooding. So that's the best I can tell you. What's going on in Washington with the big, beautiful bill? I don't know. Does anybody really? Justin Buechler joins us now, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. Try to walk us through it. How you doing, professor?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about, you know, this whole Byrd rule and Senate parliamentarian, because we're getting into the deep processes here of the way the government works. And I don't know that a lot of people know about it. So can you kind of give us a tutorial on this?
Sure. So basically what's happening is that nearly any piece of legislation has to go through the Senate with the possibility of a filibuster. And that means cutting off debate with a cloture motion, and that requires 60 votes. The only legislation that doesn't require a cloture motion is what's called a budget reconciliation bill. So what happens with a budget reconciliation bill is that there are a series of procedures, and the process automatically cuts off debate after a certain period of time, so you don't have to call for cloture. But there are a bunch of procedural details to a budget reconciliation bill. So the way that the rules are written for a budget reconciliation bill is you can't just pass anything under budget reconciliation. So the rules for budget reconciliation include a set of restrictions named after a longtime senator from West Virginia named Robert C. Byrd, hence the Byrd Rule. And the Byrd Rule has a couple of primary provisions. First of all, you're not allowed to increase the deficit for more than 10 years. Now, you might think, shouldn't we decrease the deficit? Mm-hmm. But nobody ever does that, right? So we're going to increase the deficit. Yay, that. Okay. But the bigger issue right now is that budget reconciliation bills are only intended for what's called fiscal policy. So that means taxing and spending. You can change the tax rates and you can adjust how much is spent on any given program. You're not supposed to use budget reconciliation bills to pass general policy making. So here's the real problem with that. Where is the line between taxing and spending and policy making? Because in some sense, spending or taxing it is policy making. Mm-hmm. And if you change spending provisions in a certain way, are you fundamentally altering policy? So the line can get really murky. And the decision for what qualifies as fiscal policy is made by an appointed position. That's the Senate parliamentarian. Her name is Elizabeth McDonough. She has an appointed position, and she's basically the Senate's referee for what qualifies under the Senate's reconciliation rules. So right now, the Senate's going through this process. We call it the bird bath because we have to give everything a name like that. Mm-hmm. And every provision.
It's pretty clever if you think about it.
What was that?
Pretty clever if you think about it. Bird bath.
Yeah, yeah.
Named after
yeah,
him. You got to clean it up, see what fits, what doesn't. But go ahead.
Exactly. So what's going on is all of the different provisions for the budget reconciliation bill are going to Elizabeth McDonough, and she's making a call for what qualifies as just taxing and spending and what crosses the line into policymaking. And she's telling the Senate Republicans, no, this is policymaking, and hence you can't put it into a reconciliation bill. And that's what's going on.
Who appoints the Senate parliamentarian?
Senate Majority Leader. So officially, she is appointed by John Thune, but it is a nonpartisan position. It's a professional position. She's been there for a long time, and she is pretty well respected. So it is appointed by the majority leader, but the position is just considered sort of a nonpartisan position. You do a kind of a straight down the line job, and you keep it for a long time.
What made me think about that is when you talked about being the referee, and I'm thinking of Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack with the money. Here, keep it fair, keep it fair. So does this Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, you said?
McDonough,
does she go back like through different administrations? How far back does she go?
She's been there for a while. I forget how long she's been there, but she's been
so
there
she would
for
have been
a while.
Reappointed, actually, not.
She's been reappointed. Yeah, she's been there for a while, but she is generally pretty well respected. And what that means is she makes everybody angry.
Pretty much. If referees doing their job, right? If I'm doing my job, I get texts from people that say I hate Trump. People say I love Trump. So apparently I'm doing the right thing. And in terms of government and everything else. So, yeah, I guess you got to go right down the middle. When it comes to the different moves, I'm looking at John Kennedy, Louisiana, said it was a setback. Vice President Vance saying, Greg Stubbe, a Republican, saying the vice president should overrule the parliamentarian because the vice president's the president of the Senate. Tommy Tuberville, Lord knows where he's at, said that she should be fired. Again, keep it fair, keep it fair. Where does this all get codified in terms of rule? Because the Constitution, does it say anything about a parliamentarian? Does it say anything about filibuster? I'm just going back to the origins of this because we all wind up with rules and doing things and we wonder where they come from, right?
Yeah. So the Constitution doesn't say anything about budget reconciliation or the Senate parliamentarian's role in any of this. So this is written into the rules of the Senate, and rules can change. So hypothetically, if you wanted to change the rules of the Senate, that can be done. And the rule for changing the rules, it sounds weird to say it like that, but the rule for changing the rules requires a vote of the Senate, and the threshold is 2/3. So you would need to get a vote of 2/3 of the Senate to change the rules of the Senate. And that's not going to happen for anything. You don't get 2/3 of the Senate to agree on anything. Now, in principle, you could have a majority of the Senate simply vote to ignore the Senate parliamentarian and ignore the rules. And we call that the nuclear option. We've seen that over the course of
let me take a break, Professor. I want to hear about the nuclear option when we come back. I just noticed the clock. We got to stop for traffic here. We're talking about the Byrd rule, the Byrd bath, the parliamentarian, about the big, beautiful bill, about filibusters. And when we come back, we're going to talk about nuclear option. 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about the big, beautiful bill, as it's called, about the Senate parliamentarian that was reappointed by John Thune, but was originally appointed by Harry Reid, who are about as, I guess, politically diametrically opposed as can be. So the idea is to keep it fair. And Professor Justin Buechler, an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University, is trying to walk us through this kind of confusing process about passing a bill with reconciliation to avoid the filibuster, and then it's got to pass the Byrd bath, if you will, and see that it doesn't. Again, it's tell me about the fine line for people that are just tuning in, Professor, because it's hard to say if it's not that everything could be considered fiscal, because at some point it's going to affect the budget, right?
Yeah. So the basic idea is that nearly any policy could indirectly affect the budget, taxing and spending. Mm-hmm. But the Senate parliamentarian will make a ruling on whether or not a provision is directly about taxing or spending. And anything that isn't clearly directly taxing or spending is going to be thrown out of a budget reconciliation bill. And she tries to make a determination about whether a policy is sufficiently directly about fiscal policy, and anything that's just indirect, she'll throw it out. And that's basically what she's doing.
So let's talk about the nuclear option. What is that?
Okay. So if you think back to during President Obama's second term, when Mitch McConnell was then minority leader of the Senate, he announced that the Republicans were going to blockade, filibuster, literally anyone that Barack Obama was going to name to the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the second most important court in the country, and basically say that from then on, only Republicans could fill vacancies on the second most important court. And that forced Harry Reid to say, okay, we either need to use the nuclear option and get rid of the filibuster for judicial nominations, or the Republicans would control the second most important court in the country. So that basically forced the Democrats to use what we call the nuclear option, which is when the majority party says we are going to ignore a supermajority requirement and say we have a majority, we're going to ignore the rules and do whatever we want. So the nuclear option basically means the majority party says we have 51 votes, we're going to do whatever we want, regardless of what the rules say. So first, the Democrats used that nuclear option to get rid of filibusters for lower-level court nominations. Then, if you get to 2016, Justice Scalia dies, Republicans blockade that nomination, and then Republicans come in after President Trump's election, his first election, and Republicans use the nuclear option to appoint Justice Gorsuch after Trump's victory. Okay. So the nuclear option has been used in order to fill vacancies. But the basic idea is that you use the fact that you have 51 votes to ignore a supermajority requirement. What could happen is the majority party says that the parliamentarian does not allow us to put this provision into a budget reconciliation bill. Now, if the majority party says we have 51 votes, we're going to overrule the parliamentarian, what that means is you can put literally anything into a budget reconciliation bill. You can put abortion policy into a budget reconciliation bill. And if you can put literally anything into a budget reconciliation bill, then the filibuster basically doesn't exist anymore. So that would be kind of a nuclear option, allowing the majority party. Go ahead.
Is there any, before we run out of time, is there any limitation on the use of the nuclear option, or is that up to the majority party to decide?
Well, the whole point is there's no limit because it's the majority party saying we have 51 votes, we're going to do whatever we want and ignore a supermajority requirement. That's exactly what the nuclear option is. It's the majority party ignoring the rules because they have 51 votes.
So they can do that whenever they want?
Yes.
So the only thing I would warn people is that if you have a Republican majority and you're in favor of that, keep in mind that if that becomes the rule of the nation or the way we do things, it could also happen if you have a Democratic majority, correct?
That's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly right. It's whatever your party does when they are in the majority, the other party is going to do it when they are in the majority. So everything's going to come back around.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Leah Long, Director of Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, about summertime business and the big, beautiful bill and more right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 36, 14 till 7. If you're heading from the North Shore to the South Shore, the causeway is closed and will be for about, hopefully, no more than 25 more minutes. Carlton Dufour Show General Manager telling us that there's a jackknife truck and the people are on the way to try to clear all of that up. So if you are on the causeway, apparently you know what to do. You move to the side and let the emergency equipment through and everybody gets on their way as quickly as possible. But he said 30 minutes, and that was about 5 minutes ago, rather, so we'll see. Leah Long joins us, Director of Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. How you doing, Leah Long?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know, I heard a story yesterday about people cutting back with the economy and on eating out, and that got me to thinking about businesses, and you know, it's the lifeblood of the economy, right? Businesses, but yet
yeah.
There's only so much disposable income to go around. How are businesses faring? I don't know, with the economy, are people cutting back? Are they saving money? Tell me how things are working out.
you know, we kind of went on some highs and lows of, you know, we got a new administration. We're hopeful, you know, that that administration will be more business friendly. But you're also still dealing with setbacks from, you know, all the increase in inflation. And so for business owners right now, one thing that has been pretty positive is in the big, beautiful bill, the 20% small business deduction is in that bill. When it did pass out of the House, and, you know, right now it's in the Senate's hands, and, you know, we're hoping that that'll stay in there and they'll protect small business owners, because if not, 33 million small business owners in the country are going to face a tax hike, and that's going to be awful because it affects their balancing break at the end of the day, and some people may not be able to handle or absorb that 20% that they're going to be hit with. So the fact that that's in there, you know, optimism's high, and especially in Louisiana, you know, we worked last year to cut the personal income tax, and so that's also giving these small business owners money back to themselves so they can reinvest in their company. And so moving forward, you know, as we move through the Trump administration, as we continue in Louisiana, to be able to make Louisiana and the country more pro-business is going to be great, and it's going to help these business owners.
Tell me about this 20% thing. How's it work? It was a deduction and then it was going to go away, or explain that.
Yes,
to me,
so it's set to expire in 2025, so 20% small business deduction, so you're not taxed on the first 20% of your income. And so that was set to expire. You know, we've worked with Congress, you know, we've worked with the Louisiana delegation, everybody, to let them know that this is a major issue for small business owners. And luckily it did get put in the bill. And, you know, we've talked about that. We've put out information on it, and we're hopeful that it stays in the bill, hopeful it stays where it needs to be, and that this is signed and made permanent when this is all said and done.
So there's the ongoing question about, can you really tax a business, because it's going to ultimately get passed along. One of two things can happen: they either pass it along to the consumer, or they go out of business, or they pass it along, maybe make it three things or four things. I don't know, Leah. I'm just on a roll here. Or they have to raise prices, and that goes back to how I began the conversation with: there's only so much disposable income to go around. So if they have to raise prices to make up for the 20%, because you can't tax a business, well, then people that are on the margin of either buying something or not buying something, eating out, not eating out, then maybe they're less inclined to do that. And that could lead the business to go out, them to go out of business as well, right?
Yeah, it's unfortunately a revolving circle, it seems like. You know, it's a balancing act for small business owners. You know, you can't absorb some of these new costs. You know, we also talk about insurance. We've been talking about that for years. Mm-hmm. Insurance premiums for business owners, that, you know, it's hard to absorb those costs. So they either have to absorb it at their bottom line, or they've got to pass those costs, additional new costs, to consumers. And so that's one thing they don't want to do as a small business owner. You probably have, you know, your certain clientele that's been there since you've opened, and people want to continue to support small business because they're the ones that support the economy. You know, they're the ones that support your community. They sponsor your kids' t-ball team. So people want to go to small business. We always think about that. We want to go to that local mom and pop shop. And so we have to keep, you know, a balancing system for them so they can stay in business and they can compete with the big national chains, because there's something special about going into your small business and, you know, being able to actually go speak to the owner. They may be working the front desk. They may be help waiting tables too. And so there's passion in that, and you see that in a small business.
Now let me take a break. Let me take a break, Leah, if I can, for traffic here, because we've got some trouble. We'll take a break for traffic. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about summertime. I know it's challenging for restaurants, and we'll talk to Ian McNulty about that in 9 o'clock hour, as we always do. But I want to talk about other businesses as well and some challenges they face during the summertime. 6:51, we're talking to Leah Long, Director of the Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, about the Big Beautiful Bill, extending that 20% tax cut for small businesses and how important that is to them. We'll talk about summertime and business when we return. And I would ask you at 504-260-1870, that's the Oakland Art Jeweler talk and text line, don't text and drive. But if you can, let me know. Have you cut back on your spending habits? Are you spending less, eating out less? Have you changed your spending habits because of whatever's going on for you in the economy? 6:51 and a half, traffic now, WWL. 6:55 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Causeway still closed, southbound. For the most part, I'm getting some texts, but I'll wait till here officially on that. Because you don't know, when people say it's open, it might be people that are moving over and they get the wrong idea. But either way, Causeway southbound delays for about 20 more minutes maybe. We're talking to Leah Long, Director of the Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Leah, I was talking about summertime being tough for restaurants. Is summertime tough for other small businesses as well? And specifically, which ones?
It's not specific, you know, type of industry that it's tough. Summer's just hard there for a while because people are in and out of vacation, families are gone. So it's just one of those things. And you also have to have summertime work. Because sometimes you're in an industry where you need more people during the summertime because there's people around. So it's not specific to one industry. You know, it's kind of like one of those first of the year. People are hopeful, you know, when you're first of the year, what it's going to look like. And then you get to summer, and some industries do better than the others. And so it's one of those things that as it prolongs, and, you know, you have people, we now had a bill last year, I don't know if you remember it, that allowed 16 to 17-year-olds to work summer jobs, and they get different credits for that. And so just seeing things like that helps make the labor force better for summertime employment.
So when it comes to the session, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, you might get what you need. Tell me where you feel about the session and what happened. Did I pretty much nail it there or not?
You don't always get what you want. Sometimes you do get what you need. You also need more.
Did I say
and you
backward?
Always want more.
Yeah, you always want more. We always. Yeah.
You always want more. So insurance reform, obviously there was a bunch that did not make it through Senate Jude A, which we expected that, but there were some big bills that made it through that I'm hopeful will move the needle in the right point in the right direction for insurance reform, because these small business owners are having a tough time paying these insurance premiums. They're outrageous. Like I said earlier, they've got to absorb those costs somehow. So we're hopeful for that, you know, that continues to move in the right direction. Another big one, speaking about labor force and employment, is the one-door policy, which Kim Carver, Stephanie Barrett from the North Shore carried those bills, and it's going to combine DCFS with the Louisiana Workforce Commission to make it easier for people to get a job. You know, people that need a job, they're going to be able to go to one place, look, find a job. It's going to be a great place for employees and employers to hopefully link up and help the labor quality shortages we have here in the state.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't mean to put you in a bad spot here, but I'm thinking about National Federation of Independent Businesses, Louisiana Small Businesses, the ads we see for legal firms, which I guess are small businesses. Does that kind of put your organization in a tough spot? Because you maybe are looking to reform some things that would hurt the people that are in the organization?
Not necessarily. NFIB, we're broad. You know, we're not just one specific industry. And so we try to do what's best for every business owner in reality. And so sometimes we don't get into certain specifics of industry-related items, but insurance is the number one issue between taxes and insurance here. And so that's something we definitely have engaged on. We've engaged our members on kind of what is the biggest thing affecting their business, what is driving costs up in their business, and insurance has been it pretty steadily the past couple of years.
But it's hard to address that without looking at the tort situation in Louisiana, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, think about small businesses. They do face some of the highest litigation charges when it comes to lawsuit abuse, because more than likely they don't have an attorney on file. Mm. They've got to go hire an attorney, and one bad lawsuit could take out a small mom-and-pop restaurant, you know, five employees or less, or, you know, business. They could take them out if the lawsuit's big enough. If, you know, you get these big high-dollar amounts that you're awarded, they can completely tank the business.
Thank you, Leah. Appreciate it. Have a nice summer if we don't talk to you again. Leah Long, Director of Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. When we come back, we talk to Louisiana Representative John Ilg about the governor vetoing this Mylar balloon release bill, which I don't understand why he did that at all, because he says it's about enforcement, but we know these things cause power outages, and I don't understand it. Then we'll talk to Scott Boyle with DOTD about a project on Metairie Road and some more. So stay tuned. A lot coming up. Tommy Tucker, WWO.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.